Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of August 9th, 2020. We begin, as we have been, with the latest updates from the public health departments. First, from the Ford County Public Health Department, and this is for release on August 13th, 2020 at 3 p.m. Ford County Public Health Department is announcing 6 new cases. 5 cases are associated with an outbreak at a long-term care facility. Ford County has a total of 76 cases. Of those, 58 are confirmed and 18 are probable. 62 of the previously reported cases have been released from isolation. 12 cases remain active, with 1 case hospitalized. There have been 2 COVID-related deaths. 62% of the cases are female, 38% male. There are 4 cases of people under the age of 20, 13 cases of people between the ages of 20 and 29, 12 cases of people between the ages of 30 and 39, 8 cases between 40 and 49, 7 between 50 and 59, 11 between 60 and 69, 7 between 70 and 79, 10 between 80 and 89, and 4 above 90. Now, from the Iroquois County Public Health Department, there have been 290 total cases. Of those, 272 are confirmed, 18 are probable, 222 have been released from isolation, 44 are currently in home isolation, 10 are hospitalized, and 14 are deceased. 59.6% of cases are female, 43.1% are male. There have been a total of 6,676 tests, total negative results, 6,386. Total laboratory confirmed positive results, 272, and total probable positive results, 18. And that is current as of August 12, 2020. Last week, the Gibson City-Melvin Sibley School District's back-to-school plan was published in the paper. This week, PBL School Board approves Return to Learn plan. Paxton. The first day of school in the Paxton-Buckley-Lota School District is set for August 19th. Due to health and safety concerns regarding the COVID-19 pandemic, the 2021 school year will look different than in years past. On Wednesday, August 12th, the PBL School Board approved its Return to Learn reopening plan, in which students will attend school 5 days a week, with the exception of pre-scheduled holidays and breaks, but on a shortened schedule. Daily dismissal is set for 1 p.m. at Clara Peterson Elementary, 12:45 p.m. in PBL Junior High School, and 12:40 p.m. at PBL High School. Session 1 of pre-kindergarten is set for 8 to 10:15 a.m., and Session 2 is set for 10:45 a.m. to 1 p.m. Dismissal times will be staggered. Principals from each school in the district will communicate final arrival and dismissal times. PBL High School students will follow a block schedule, taking 4 classes per day, alternating days. Students at the high school will arrive between 7:35 and 8 a.m. each day and attend class periods 1 to 4 and 5 to 8 on alternating days. Students will have 8 class periods total, 4 per day. Students will receive a bagged lunch at the end of the last period each day. 6th period is a study hall for all students. Students in kindergarten through 8th grade will be grouped and taught in cohorts to the extent possible to avoid excess travel throughout the building. This grouping method will encourage social distancing and will reduce the amount of interaction students have each day. Students who are unable to attend physically due to medical conditions or choose not to attend in person will be provided learning opportunities through remote instruction. This instruction and the delivery platform will vary from grade to grade and from building to building. The plan states that the school district will have the same high expectations for all learners. All school rules, procedures, dress codes, etc. apply to in-person as well as remote learners. Remote learners are subject to progressive discipline as if they were in person. It might look a little different, but you can't be on remote learning giving everybody the bird and think it's going to be okay, PBL Superintendent Cliff McClure said at Wednesday's meeting. It's not going to be okay. You're in school. The guiding principles for the plan are as follows. The use of personal protective equipment, including face masks, is, with rare exceptions, required by all students and staff. Any gatherings of more than 50 individuals in one space indoors is prohibited. Social distancing is required to be observed as much as possible. Schools are required to conduct symptom screenings and temperature checks or require that individuals self-certify that they are free of symptoms before entering school buildings or riding in school vehicles. An increase in school-wide cleaning and disinfecting is required. According to the plan, the staff will complete temperature checks for students entering the building or buses. Parents will submit a daily health certification through Google Forms. PBL Technology Coordinator Dustin Franke and 2018 PBL graduate Cody Harrison have been working on a self-certification system for staff that will be run through staff email and then a self-certification by parents, so each morning the parents would self-certify the child to say basically that my child's healthy, McClure said. It'll ask a series of questions. If the parent doesn't self-certify, the procedure, McClure explained, for kindergarten through fifth grade, that staff would call the parents and have them certify over the phone. For grades 6 through 12, an administrator or someone else would ask the questions. We would love for the parents to be self-certifying every day and taking that responsibility on, McClure said. All staff will receive COVID-19 training, including transmission, prevention, and use of masks. The plan further states that all staff and students will receive training in the purpose and proper usage of masks as personal protective equipment. Staff will remind students about wearing their masks correctly throughout the day. We expect there will be a lot of reminders, the plan stated, especially with younger children early on as students get used to wearing masks. If a student has a temperature when he or she boards the bus, there will be a small quarantine area. That is less dangerous to everybody than leaving a young child on a country road or a quarter-mile driveway, McClure said. At school, anyone with noticeable symptoms would be isolated and have their parents called for pickup. Signage will be posted at the school describing signs, symptoms, proper hand washing, social distancing, and when to stay home. Frequent promotion of daily hygiene and social distancing measure will take place throughout the school buildings. We have a nurse in each building, so a nurse can be in each building to handle the day-to-day issues and some of the issues that have been brought on by this, McClure said. Water fountains will be disabled, with only the water bottle filling option available. Parents are asked to send a personal water bottle for their child. Mental health and wellness social workers are going to be doing some planned lessons, according to McClure. In the first 2 weeks, the social and emotional connection with kids are a lot more important right now than anything that we could do in the classroom, he said. According to the plan, resources available to assist students with mental health needs range from direct support from school counselors, social workers, psychologists, and school nurses, as well as linking the child with community resources if needed. Teachers and staff will be carefully monitoring students and will notify parents and guardians of any child who may need additional or mental health support. Touch points around the campuses will be disinfected throughout the day, and highly utilized spaces will be deep cleaned according to the plan. Spray bottles of germicide and microfiber cloths will be placed in each classroom. Hand sanitizer will be available. An isolation room to separate from the nurse's office will be available in each school for students exhibiting symptoms. Air conditioning filters will be changed with increased frequency. Lunch and breakfast will be available to students opting to return to learn remotely. To begin with, we'll have them pick them up, McClure said. Then we'll think about delivery later. Breakfast will be served adhering to all group size and social distance protocols. Elementary students will be served lunch in their classrooms to avoid excess movement and to maximize social distancing. Junior high school and high school students will be delivered a grab-and-go lunch toward the end of their on-site contact hours. The school district will use disposable cutlery and trays, and all condiments will be provided in pre-portioned packages. Anyone who would prefer their child not handle cash or checks for meal payments can place money on their child's meal account through their Skyward Parent portal. The fee associated with this service will be temporarily waived. Breakfast will be separated so there is no more than 50 kids in one space. At the end of the school day, parents who want to pick up their elementary school children before lunch at noon will be allowed to do so. Kids can also walk home with permission, or they can bring their own lunch. Junior high, high school, and high school students will grab a grab-and-go lunch on the way out the door if they want to do it. The plan also calls for high touch points in the cafeterias to be frequently sanitized. "We're not going to take delivery from restaurants this year," McClure said. The maximum capacity for each school bus will be 50, but McClure said the district wants to try to keep the capacity at around 40. In July, First Student and the administrators worked to make sure they could reroute groups, people, so there'll probably be different bus routes this year to relieve some of the pressure from some of the bus routes. All persons on the bus will be required to wear a face mask while being transported and will follow seating charts that are established to establish social distancing. Children from the same family will be seated together as much as possible. School buses will be sanitized twice daily, and high-touch areas will be wiped clean between group transfers. Hand sanitizer and tissues will be available on the bus for student use. Parents will need to provide health certification through Google Forms, and staff will complete a temperature check prior to a student boarding the bus. If a student does not pass screening, the parent or guardian will be immediately contacted to arrange to pick up the child. The student will be isolated from others to the greatest extent possible while on the bus. Homecoming activities are scheduled for September 14th to 19th. A fall break will take place October 3rd. A day off is scheduled for Election Day on November 3rd. Thanksgiving break is set to November 25th to 27th. Winter break is December 21st to January 1st, with school to resume on January 5th, after a Teachers Institute Day on January 4th. Spring break is set for March 29th to April 5th, and the last day of student attendance for the 2021 school year is set for May 26th, with high school graduation to take place on May 28th. "A couple of things will probably change," McClure said at the meeting, "depending on the school district stays with in-person or goes to remote learning or a hybrid. If we make changes in how we're going to deliver education, we're going to have to take a day or two to get organized," McClure said. Due to donations from the PBL Education Foundation, PBL has enough devices to allow each student in grades kindergarten through grade 12 an individual iPad or Chromebook. PBL has utilized federal grants to supply each teacher with a laptop to utilize in their classrooms for instructional purposes, planning, online collaboration, and to ease the difficulty of transitioning between phases on instruction, especially to support and enhance remote learning. PBL has provided teacher training on Google Classroom, GoGuardian, IXL, and Screencastify. Many teachers and student resources are available online. Resources include Wonder Reading Libraries, Math in Focus materials, and virtual manipulatives, science texts and videos, and social studies virtual material. The district is also investing in online platforms such as Newsela, Vocabulary.com, and IXL to support in-person as well as remote or blended learning. Teachers may use Khan Academy and many other educational platforms to support and enhance instruction. The district has purchased and is installing hotspots outside of buildings for student use in Roberts, Buckley, and Loda. Hotspots are currently available for student use at Clara Peterson, PBL Junior High School, and PBL High School parking lots. "I know that's not ideal, but if you needed a hotspot, you could get to it," McClure said. "I am so happy we ordered our Chromebooks back in February. We got what we needed." The technology team is creating a series of video tutorials for parents and other adults who may assist students. The plan includes event guidelines. All competing schools and spectators, if allowed, must adhere to the following guidelines when events are being hosted at Paxson Buckley Loda. All visiting schools must certify that their coaches and athletes are healthy to the best of their knowledge. Competing schools must fill out the IESA-IHSA COVID-19 form and certify that all personnel are symptom-free before arriving at PBL. Anyone displaying symptoms should not be in attendance. Upon arrival, schools will be directed to a designated area by a PBL coach or administrator. Opposing schools will notify PBL of their planned arrival time. All personnel must wear masks. Masks may be removed by competitors upon the start of the activity and must be put back on when not actively participating. Signs will be posted to remind competitors to remain socially distant and wear masks. There will be no physical contact between opposing schools. Post-game handshakes, etc., will not be conducted. Concession stands will not be provided. Bathrooms will be available on a limited basis. Signs will be posted limiting the number of people in restrooms. At baseball and softball fields, there will be porta-potties for the spectators, and that then the teams competing will use the bathrooms at concession stands. There will be no award ceremonies after events. Schools are encouraged to leave as soon as possible at the conclusion of the competition. At this point in time, spectators will be limited to immediate family members of the competing athletes and coaches. All spectators must remain in the designated spectated area. Signage will be posted for spectator areas. If possible, the school district asks spectators to stay in their vehicle or close to their vehicle and limit movement around the area as much as possible. Spectators must wear masks and socially distance. Spectators must not come in contact with any of the competitors, coaches, or other personnel working the event unless medical attention is needed for a child. Spectators will not be allowed for any indoor activities at this time. Guidance for indoor activities will be coming at a later date. There will be no public seating. People will have to bring their own lawn chairs, sit on the bed of their truck, McClure said. We're just trying to eliminate as much cleaning and management as we possibly can. According to the plan, individualized education plans will be reviewed for the circumstances of the child's learning environment, and any needed update to the IEP will be made as necessary. General education and special education educators, related service providers, and families will discuss students' individual needs and agree to a prioritized set of services that provide access to curriculum and enable progress through IEP goals. Services for students with specific health or support needs will be addressed in collaboration with families on an individual basis. An individual who has had close contact with someone who tested positive or is suspected of having COVID-19 may return after a 14-day quarantine period from the date of the last contact with COVID-19 with positive individuals as determined by the Ford County Public Health Department. A report of negative COVID-19 testing on a quarantined individual will not allow for return prior to the 14 days. Following is the return to school plan for an individual tested positive or is suspected of having COVID-19 and had symptoms. A symptom-based strategy may return after at least 10 days have passed since the onset of symptoms and at least 24 hours with fever-free without the use of fever-reducing medications. Following is the plan of an individual tested positive for COVID-19 but had no symptoms. The time-based strategy may return after at least 10 days passed since the date of first positive COVID-19 test. If an individual exhibits one or more symptoms of COVID-19 as defined by the Centers for Disease Control, he may return 10 days after the onset of symptoms and 24-hour fever-free or documentation from a physician, nurse practitioner, or physician's assistant stating an alternate diagnosis for the symptoms. And the student or staff member has medical clearance to return to school accompanied by either a physician's statement indicating COVID-19 is not required or a negative COVID-19 test. All of the above information is subject to change following any updated guidance from the Centers for Disease Control, the Illinois Department of Public Health, or the local health department. We will assist in all of this, McClure said. The Ford County Public Health Department will be driving most of the decision-making on this. The PBL plan stated that parents will be notified of COVID-19 cases in their child's school or classroom and will receive guidance from PBL and the Ford County Public Health Department on the best course of action moving forward. Temporary closure of a classroom, grade-level wing, school, or district could take place in order to identify those individuals were in close contact with an infected individual. The plan stated that PBL will follow HIPAA and FERPA privacy laws in any communication sent home to parents. You've got to be careful because of HIPAA about narrowing it too much about making an announcement about it, but we will be making announcements if someone gets it and what our course of action will be. And that's the Back to Learn School plan for the PBL school district. Now we'll turn to the obituaries for Ford County for the week of August 9, 2020. Abraham Anthony Brumlevy, Urbana. Friends and family of Abraham Anthony Brumlevy are invited to his interment and memorial service at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 22nd at Woodlawn Cemetery in North Kohler Avenue, Urbana, where his ashes will be buried next to his parents. His aunt Kathleen Anderson's ashes will be buried at the same time. Following the service, which will be officiated by the Reverend Jim Linder, folks are invited to an outdoor, socially distanced lunch catered by Black Dog Barbecue. Memorials may be made to the Epilepsy Foundation of America or to the Illinois chapter of NORML. Lloyd H. Sloat, Fisher. Lloyd H. Sloat passed peacefully away at his home in Fisher on August 10, 2020, at the age of 96. His loving family had the privilege and honor of caring for him in his last days. A private family graveside will be held at Willowbrook Cemetery in Fisher. Pastor Glenn Hart will officiate, and military honors will be accorded by the Fisher AMVETS Post 52. Memorial contributions may be made to the St. Jude's Children's Hospital in St. Louis. Newton A. Newt Anderson, Paxton. Newton A. Newt Anderson, 67, of Paxton, passed away at 2:08 a.m. Monday, August 10, 2020, at his home. Funeral services were held Thursday, August 13th, at the Paxton Nazarene Church in Paxton. Memorials may be made to his family to be used for the education of his grandchildren. Denise Marie Curtis Scudder, Ludlow. Denise Marie Curtis Scudder, 50, of Ludlow, passed away at 9:57 p.m. Sunday, August 9, 2020, at her home. Private family funeral service and burial will be held in Maplewood Cemetery, Rantoul, with the Reverend Paula D. Wallace officiating. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Genevra M. Gooding, Watseka. Genevra M. Gooding, 101 of Watseka, passed away on Saturday, August 8, 2020, at Iroquois Memorial Hospital. A private funeral mass will be held at St. John Catholic Church in Earl Park, Indiana. Burial will follow at St. Joseph Cemetery in Kentland, Indiana. Memorials may be made to St. Joseph Catholic Church, St. Edmund Catholic Church, or to the Iroquois Memorial Hospice. Mary L. Carley, Watseka. Mary L. Carley, 92, of Watseka, passed away on Saturday, August 8, 2020, at her home. A private funeral service will be held at the Knapp Funeral Home in Watseka on Saturday, August 15th. Private burial will be in the Fletcher Cemetery in Crescent City, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Iroquois Memorial Hospice or the Watseka Elks Lodge. We return to the news with an article entitled Paxton Grand Ole Flag Ceremony Parade Postponed to 2021. Paxton. COVID-19 related restrictions have once again led to the postponement of the parade and flag raising ceremony celebrating the culmination of the Paxton Grand Ole Flag Project. The events, originally scheduled for Flag Day in June and later rescheduled to September 13th due to COVID-19 concerns, are now set for Memorial Day in 2021. We had a flag meeting last night. Unfortunately, due to the current COVID-19 restrictions, we will not be able to have our big ceremony on September 13th. Cody Keitzman, a member of the Paxton Grand Ole Flag Committee, said Tuesday in an email to the Ford County Chronicle. The committee wants the ceremony to be huge, and with the current limitation of 50 or less people in a single gathering, it just isn't possible. Paxton Fire Chief Denny Kingren, the lead organizer of the project, was clearly frustrated by the postponement, but he understood the reason. Kingren said Paxton-Buckley Lotus school district officials were concerned about liability if a large gathering were to be held on school district property, as well as was the plan for the ceremony. "We want it to be grand like it's supposed to be when it happens, so if we've got to push it back, we've got to push it back," Kingren told the Chronicle. "That's all there is to it." The good news is, by pushing it back, the ceremony and the parade immediately preceding it, there's more time for fundraising to occur, Keitzman said. Donations are still being accepted for the project, and people can also help the cause by buying personalized engraved bricks that will line a memorial area surrounding the Paxton Grand Ole Flag's 150-foot flagpole. With the ceremony being pushed back, their brick will be in place for the big flag-raising ceremony, Keitzman said. Workers for flagpoles, etc., delivered the steel flagpole in pieces in July and finished assembly, welding, and painting within 2 days. The flagpole's base was later set in concrete in a 15-foot-deep, 8-foot-wide hole awaiting the raising of the first 30-by-60-foot American flag. The first flag, donated by the Paxton American Legion Post, was to be raised during a September 13th ceremony at the flagpole site immediately west of PBL High School and east of Interstate 57. The ceremony was to immediately follow a patriotic parade in which the flag would be carried through Paxton to the high school. Now, of course, both the ceremony and the parade will need to wait. Fundraising for the giant landmark began on Flag Day in June 2019. As of July 24th, $54,192 had been raised, according to Keitzman. That number included funds donated to the Paxton Grand Ole Flag Project's account at the Frederick Community Bank, plus proceeds from the sale of personalized bricks. The personalized bricks will line the perimeter of the memorial area around the flagpole and a sidewalk leading to it. There are 4-by-8-inch bricks being sold for $100 apiece, as well as some 8-by-8-inch bricks for $250 each. The bricks, which can be engraved with the names of family members or friends, for example, are available for purchase through thatsmybrick.com/PaxtonFlag or by filling out an order form and dropping it off or emailing it to the Frederick Community Bank, 106 North Market Street, Paxton, Illinois, 60957. So far, we have sold 104 4x8 bricks and 66 8x8 bricks, Keitzman said. For more information on the project, people can contact Kingren at 217-202-6398 or Keitzman at 217-379-2336. Now from the Ford County Treasurer, after lengthy delay, Ford County tax bills to be mailed soon. Paxton. After an unusually lengthy delay, Ford County landowners can expect to finally receive their 2019 property tax bills in the mail by the middle of next week, County Treasurer Chrisha Shoemaker said. Shoemaker told the Ford County Chronicle that the bills were being proofed Tuesday in preparation for being printed and then mailed. They should be in the mail by the 17th, Shoemaker said. The due date for the first installment is September 18th, with the due date for the second installment being November 6th. Taxes may be paid by mail at any Ford County bank or at the treasurer's office at the courthouse. There is also a drop box outside the front door of the courthouse to accept payments during non-business hours. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the news from Ford County. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.